As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Happy Saturday. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis along with Luke Fox, John Molinaro of Sportsnet Magazine. Happy to have you with us. We are now just days away from the start of the NHL season and every game ever on Rogers, on Sportsnet. We have Hockey Night in Canada. We will talk hockey for a significant portion of today's program, which is understandable. And you know what? Let's go through all seven Canadian teams because it's our last chance to have a look at how they all stack up and maybe make some predictions. Now, the Toronto Maple Leafs won their final preseason game yesterday over the Red Wings. And I think, guys, when breaking down the Leafs, there's kind of an interesting mix on this team. We know they didn't go out and make the big splash in free agency. They didn't go and they did the Clarkson thing last year. Didn't exactly work out. But they went out and got kind of the poo-poo platter of forwards, right? They got a whole bunch of them. Nobody that's really overly great, at least we don't think. Maybe someone will emerge, kind of like Mason Raymond did last year. But we know when healthy, they have a pretty good goaltender. And they've got a first line that can compete with anybody in the NHL. So how do we look at the Maple Leafs here?
Well, they're in an interesting spot. I don't think they're going to be in tough to make the playoffs again, I really think. But I do like some of the moves they did in the offseason. Their bottom six wasn't helping out with any secondary scoring last year. So they went out and did get a bunch, you know, Daniel Winnick, David Booth, Mike Santorelli. And, Nonis came right out and said, we're going to have competition in camp, which I like. And then guys that you didn't expect kind of emerged, like Brandon Cozen, 5 points in the preseason. You know, granted, it's preseason, so you can only put so much stock in that. But he's fighting his way onto the team. Josh Levo looks like he has a good shot, too. So I like the healthy competition in camp amongst the forwards. And as far as defense, I had a chance to speak with Cody Franzen, and one of the key things he said was they went out and got a couple right shots.
Yeah.
And before they didn't have a good balance of lefties and righties. So Franzen in particular said that he was often playing on his offside, felt uncomfortable, hard to check on that side, hard to get the breakout pass on that side, playing on his awkward side. So he thinks the transitional game of the Leafs is going to be a bit better now that they have a proper balance of righties and lefties, because they brought in Roman Polak and Stefan Robidai, who made his debut last night, looked pretty good. And I do like the pickup of Robidai, because if he stays healthy, this guy could be a solid defensive defenseman, which is what they need, right? They got the Wanderers Gardner and Riley, who are exciting to watch, but they need that presence. They need to cut down on those shots. So they made a couple nice pickups, but there's a lot of the teams in the East also made some additions, so I think they're going to be in tough.
John, are you feeling the change in philosophy for this team? Because, every hockey nerd on face of planet Earth was acquired by some NHL team in the offseason, whether it's the Edmonton Oilers. Leafs did their best. Kyle Dubas, he gets kind of put into that category of nerd, even though he does have a scouting and, executive background with the Sioux Greyhounds. But the Maple Leafs are kind of moving in that direction. And with the moves, some of the moves they made in the offseason, some of these, I mentioned the poo-poo platter of forwards, some of them have pretty good possession, Corsi numbers, whatever. Are you sensing a difference in philosophy, and is it headed in the right direction, this Maple Leafs team, John?
Well, those are two sort of interesting questions. I think, yeah, I do sense the change in philosophy and that there is a lot of excitement about it. Now, as to whether it's actually going to produce results, I don't know. We'll see. But, yeah, I like the fact that they're taking a more analytical sort of approach to this, because I think that is a sort of like a trend that's developing, not just in hockey, but in sports in general.
Yeah.
And so, obviously they've got, experience in management with Nonis and Randy Carlyle as the head coach. But you know, why not sort of take a new approach just to complement you, you know, that's sort of already, you know, your managerial strengths. And if you can kind of get an advantage on that and kind of look at things in a different way, then I think that's only to, that can only be gained from.
We'll talk about the Montreal Canadiens in just a little bit and preview them going forward this season. But guys, and Luke, you mentioned the Maple Leafs probably life and death to make the playoffs, 8th, 9th, 7th, 10th, maybe in the Eastern Conference this year. But did anyone predict the Montreal Canadiens to make it to the Eastern Conference final a year ago? And now, I mean, okay, it's another year. We'll talk about expectations for them. It's got to be Stanley Cup, right? I mean, is the difference, is there a chasm between the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs? I mean, is that, because that's what you're saying, essentially. If the Maple Leafs are kind of a quasi-playoff team in the Eastern Conference, the Montreal Canadiens are maybe 1, 2, 3 in the East. We're talking about a chasm. I don't know. I look at the talent. I don't know if I see a chasm.
Well, I don't think in the East there is that big of a chasm. I mean, maybe you'd put the Boston Bruins at the top. Maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you know, they always shine in the regular season. But the East is a bit of a crapshoot, I think, between, you know, the second-ranked team to the 10th. There is, like, if you followed the standings all last year, there wasn't that big of a gap,
right,
in terms of points. But it's you know, the games that matter, you know, Montreal has stepped up, and they were more consistent all year, especially defensively. Like, you know, Carey Price is rock solid in net. They have some depth, you know. Tokarski shone last season in the postseason for them. So they have the goaltending prospects coming up.
But he was out of completely nowhere.
Tokarski. Yeah, he was out of nowhere. You're right. But their defense and you know, that's the most important position in my mind. And they have solid defense. You know, PK Subban is one of the most exciting players in the league. And then, you know, they have decent forwards. You know, they could use more scoring. But I do think they're a step above. Look what happened with the Boston Bruins. You know, they beat the Boston Bruins in the playoffs. That's where you make your mark, you know?
Well, the Maple Leafs a couple of years ago took the Boston Bruins to 7 games,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is essentially you're talking about the Leafs being maybe a borderline playoff team. Would we be shocked, though? Would we allow ourselves to be shocked if they went on a Montreal Canadiens-like run of a year ago, considering the Eastern Conference? But John, you're saying, yes,
yeah,
you would be shocked.
Well, no, I mean, I shocked. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Shocked in one sense, because I just think on paper, I don't think they have the talent or the depth to go on kind of like the kind of run that the Canadians do. But there is that sort of X factor of it being the Eastern Conference, right?
Right.
There's a lot of parity there, because aside from the Bruins, I think it's just the Bruins and everyone else. So yeah, there's absolutely that chance that, you know, if they do kind of get their stuff together and kind of play consistent hockey, especially down like in the second half of the season, they can get some momentum into the playoffs. Then yeah, sure. But I don't know. Just as I said, again, on paper, it isn't a team that sort of excites me. And I don't think it's a team that has a great deal of depth.
Well, if you're looking at top line, I mean, who would you rather have, Montreal Canadiens or Toronto Maple Leafs? Probably rather have that Leafs first line, right?
Yes,
yeah,
I'd say so, but we're only talking about one line, right?
I know. Okay, we're talking about
no, but you're right. Phil Kessel is money in the bank. You know, like he probably has one of the best shots in the whole league, if not the best shot. And
despite being 20 pounds overweight,
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah, that's fine.
Looking
that's
like
fine.
A bag of milk. Okay, that's fine. That's okay. I mean, we shouldn't be casting stones.
All he cares about is the real games. He doesn't care about training camp or any of that stuff, which is fine.
Yeah.
And JVR is like, you know, I consider Van Riemsdyk Brian Burke's parting gift to Leafs Nation. You know that,
yeah,
like what
there
a
were
steal.
Some nice moves in the Brian Burke era, must say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you know, he's coming off his first 30 goal season. You know, his hands look ridiculous even in the preseason. So I mean, those guys are magic together. And then you got Bozak, which people slam, but he does fine. You know, he's fine. He's fine. The Leafs do need a better center.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, Kadri steps up. You know, maybe this is the year that he takes a big leap. He's focused and, you know, his contract's up at the end of the year. So, you know, a lot of eyes will be on him to see what he can do.
Yeah, you mentioned Kadri and how important a year it's going to be for him to kind of cement himself as, I want to say, elite. An elite centerman, And I don't know if he will start the season as the number one center. You got to imagine they'll go back because for whatever reason, Tyler Bozak between JVR and Phil Kessel works, okay? And yes, Kadri probably has a little bit better scoring touch than Bozak, but whatever. It ain't broke, don't fix it. And when Bozak returned to the lineup last year and returned to that first line, it was still very good. That being said, this Leafs team, last year, previous years as well, has had problem with the depth of scoring, right? Like, no one has questions about that first line. That first line is going to score goals. Second line, okay, maybe. Third and fourth lines. As long as Colton Orr is off that fourth line, like, Colton Orr can't play this year, right? Like, have the Maple Leafs figured that out, that part of what makes the Boston Bruins so great, and you're not going to beat the Boston Bruins, but is that they can roll four lines. They can get production out of every line. And it seems like maybe the Maple Leafs are starting to figure that out, that you don't need four first lines, but you need four lines that can do something, John.
Yeah, well, as kind of Luke said, you need secondary scoring, right? And I'm not sure the Leafs had a great deal amount of that last season.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm really looking at sort of Kadri this year. I think he's really got to sort of step up and have like a bang out year. So, but even if he does, that sort of doesn't address, you know, the third and fourth line because, you know, what do you do there?
I think you got to remember, we're talking about a Randy Carlyle team.
Yeah.
So don't be surprised if Colton Orr is sitting on the bench.
Seriously?
I'm not saying maybe he only gets, you know, 4 minutes a game, but the Leafs have a reputation as one of the toughest teams in the league, and they like having that security there.
He's got a, well, first of all, he understands that he's on a short leash here, right? Like, this could be an in-season firing situation. Do we agree? If the Maple Leafs get off to a horrible, rancid start, Brendan Shanahan has that bullet in the chamber that he can fire. He hasn't fired it yet, and probably a good move not to fire it as his first move, but get a sense of it. And now, if the Maple Leafs do get off to that tough start, or he's playing Colton Orr 30 minutes a game, Randy Carlyle could be gone mid-season. But don't you think there are enough voices in Randy Carlyle's ear, and don't you think the message is being sent that, hey, what's worked in the past or what you've done in the past, not really going to work anymore. We're not really going to sit idly by and let you do things the way you've done in years past, last year, continue to play Colton Orr. Don't you think there's going to be enough dissenting opinions on the use of, I know Colton Orr is kind of the whipping boy, but it's the one example I can point to where a lot of people said, stop playing Colton Orr, and he just continued to play him. Aren't there going to be enough voices in Randy Carlyle's ear that he's not going to play Colton Orr?
Well, I'm sure there's voices in Randy Carlyle's ear to do a lot of things, but this guy's a strong hockey mind. He has his ways, and, you know, I don't know how much he's really going to change how he coaches. I mean, I think they do need to change their defensive system. And, that's something that he's going to address and going to have to address. But, you know, it's up to him to decide how much ice time these guys get. You know, Nonis and Shannon are in, you know, persuading him to give certain guys ice time.
Kyle Dubas isn't going to make the trip down to the locker room every game and get in Randy Carlyle's ear. They're not going to have yelling matches back and forth.
I would love to see video of that. So what it is the threat that he could be fired. Right. So is he the kind of guy that coaches for his job as opposed to coaches the way he thinks hockey should be played and how he thinks the game can be won? I don't know. So I think if he has success, he'll be fine. But if he stumbles, we could see him gone fast.
And I think you can't sort of like undermine like a coach like that. No. Like, I think that's like, especially in the Leafs sort of position.
Hasn't he already been undermined though? I look at the moves. It seems like they're saying, hey, Randy, I know you're not a big analytics guy, big numbers guy. Here's a million numbers guys that now work for this team. I feel like both the coach and the general manager have been undermined a little bit this offseason.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think, like I think Luke said, they have to change sort of their defensive systems. But, I mean, I don't think that necessarily undermines the coach. At the end of the day, this is still Randy Carlyle's team. And he's the kind of coach, like, he's an old hockey guy, right? He's not the kind of guy who's going to suffer fools gladly or going to take commands from, you know, any GM. So I think you have to let him get on with the job. And if he fails, then he fails. And then he fails on his own merits, and then you make the move.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. He's John Molinaro. He's Luke Fox. I am Ben Ennis. These gents write for Sportsnet Magazine. We're going to break down all seven Canadian NHL teams. We get set for season opener on Wednesday, and we got you covered wall-to-wall, both on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca and whatever else we come up with in the next couple of days. That countdown. I skipped over the biggest question I have this week is, what happens to these countdown clocks once Wednesday hit? Because I think people know now that there's a countdown clock counting down to the first day of the NHL season. It reads 4 right now. Do they explode? Does confetti fly out of them on Wednesday? What happens? Anyone, any idea?
I think they get reset for the playoffs, don't they?
Okay. All right. Or for next season.
Yeah, for next season.
365? Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to find out. Not sure. One last thing on the Maple Leafs. Defense, I think we all agree, was one of the major areas of concern last year. You mentioned the pickup of Stefan Robida, and so far his legs have stayed attached through one game regular season. Nobody's hit his legs with tire iron or anything. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Knock on wood. They picked up Roman Polak as well, which I think people were less high on. We know the youngsters, Morgan Rielly, Jake Gardner, and Dion Phaneuf is Dion Phaneuf. Is there enough there with Stuart Percy actually opening some eyes in the preseason? Have they done enough to improve? Is it going to be an improved defensive core this season, or is it kind of, we're treading water here?
I think slightly improved. Yeah. But, you know, was there any other way to go? I mean, they were so horrible in terms of giving up shots. There was only one way to go, which is up. So I think it is slightly improved, but you look around at the defenses on the other teams in the league, and they're still miles off. You know, you look at the Blues defense, the Blackhawks defense, the Kings. Like, this is not a championship caliber defense, and it is a ways off, and they're banking on the future. I do like that Nonis went out and committed to Gardner in the offseason. You know, most of the talk is usually about the free agents, the new guys they bring in, but it's also about the guys you keep. And, you know, Gardner's name had been bandied about in trade rumors and stuff like that. So for them to go out and commit multi-year deal to Gardner, I really like, because I do think he's a special talent, and he's still going to improve. And Riley's like, he's the real deal. He's something to watch.
Just like Luke Shen, right?
No, not so much.
No,
I really like Morgan Rielly. I think this team is, you know, since Shanahan came in, I think they're being a bit more realistic. This isn't the year. They weren't one or two pieces away. They know they're, you know, their year is going to be when Rielly and Gardner hit their peak, I think.
And we didn't even talk about William Nylander, who looks
pretty
good and likely not to start the season with the Maple Leafs. All right, let's move on to the Montreal Canadiens. Why not? And mention that the expectations are sky high for this team now, right? Out of nowhere, they reached the Eastern Conference Final last year, eventually losing to the Rangers. So much uncertainty surrounding the future of PK Subban. They get that done after, I think, part of the reason was some of the outcry from Habs fans, whether it was on social media or whatever, general media. They got it done. He is locked up until 2022. We know the goaltending is good in Carey Price. He went down in the playoffs, and maybe they are in a Stanley Cup final if Dustin Tokarski's not the man that has to carry them through. But I think there's probably some question marks offensively with this team. John, how do you look at this Montreal Canadiens team headed into this season?
I like it. I mean, I always believe that you build from the back up, and I think you need a solid defensive core and solid goaltending. Obviously, you need scoring as well, but I think as long as you have like a solid defensive scheme and you have solid defensemen and a goalie, then you're always going to be in games, and that the goals will come eventually. And I think locking up Subban was, you know, key, because he's such a dynamic player. And I think the fact that you've got him long term, you're saying, you know, he's going to be the core of this defense for a long time. So I like it. And as I said, he's such, I think, not just a dynamic player, but such a smart player too. So I think locking him up was absolutely a vital move by the Canadiens.
Does it change things though when you go from the pursuer to the team being pursued, right? Canadiens all of a sudden despite being kind of a middling playoff team headed into the playoffs, knock off the Bruins, end up in an Eastern Conference final. Your expectations now are to reach a Stanley Cup final. You're regarded as one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, whether that's, I mean, you're not quite on the Bruins level, but I guess on the echelon just below them, maybe with the Penguins, you've got a big target on your back. Does that change things for them going into this season, Luke?
I think maybe slightly. I think, you know, they have a lot of young guys on the team, and I think making it that far in the playoffs gave them a taste for what that's like to have that playoff success. And, you know, I think that'll increase their desire to get back there. And, you know, the fact that they have a new leadership group with Josh Georges and Gionta gone, I think it's there's a sense of ownership amongst those guys like Subban Max Pacioretty. So I think they kind of like, okay, this is our team now. Let's see how far we can go. I think they'll be very driven. And, you know, the fact that although Tokarski played, you know, stood on his head in the playoffs, they didn't have their number one goalie when they were going for it. And that's crucial for their confidence and everything. So I think they want to get back there. They want to get back there with Price healthy and see what kind of noise they can make. And they did make some smart moves to increase their offense, you know, flipping Danny Briere for P.A. Parenteau, I think is a good move. You know, they hardly played Briere. You know, he has a great name, and he came through with some points in the playoffs for them. A bit of a clutch guy, but they weren't playing him that much. He was relegated to the bottom six. Whereas Parenteau, they, you know, has some talent. You know, he wasn't in Patrick Waugh's good books in Colorado, but bringing him in, hopefully that can help with the scoring.
I think that as far as the expectations goes, there's always expectations in Montreal. I mean, doesn't matter if they're coming off like a season where they've reached the Eastern Conference final or they tanked it in the regular season. I mean, I was in Montreal on holiday in August, and
go to Montreal.
Well, that, but like the first day of rookie camp, and there's like, you know, there's such buzz in the city about that, right? So, I mean, I think the players and the team are used to it. I don't think it's going to sort of affect them one way or another, to be perfectly honest, because they're used to playing like this.
Yeah, Montreal's fun.
Good party city.
Yeah, I wouldn't know anything about that. No. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. John Molinaro, Luke Fox, I'm Ben Ennis. The Habs, the one thing that they kind of did outside of the PK Subban thing that made headlines was going with the alternate captains, right? They haven't gone with one guy that's going to wear the C. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, this is PK Subban's team, right? Is this just window dressing? I guess we're not in that locker room, so it's hard for us to say with 100% certainty. But certainly from an outsider's perspective, it seems like he's been given a long-term contract. They're committed to him. I guess he's probably a little too young for everybody to defer to him. But if not this season, is there any way he doesn't wear the C when they finally go to a captain?
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a mistake, to be honest.
Really?
I mean, it's a safe move. Oh, yeah. Keep everyone happy. You know, we got four guys wearing the A. But I really didn't like it. I feel like they've been messing around with PK.
Yeah.
You know, first with the bridge deal.
Yeah.
Then he goes out, wins the Norris, you know, has another fantastic...
What are they waiting for?
Another fantastic season. So he gets the latest possible arbitration date. They don't settle before arbitration. They actually go to arbitration and then settle just before the arbitration ruling. Yeah. Like, they left it to the very possible minute. What does this guy got to do for you?
He gets...
for you guys to commit? I really don't get, you know, I'm sure, you know, PK Subban's agent was shooting for the moon, but still, like, they ended up, you know, giving him the deal. Why not just give it to him?
Yeah.
Slap a C on him. You know, go all in with this guy.
You've already put your chips in.
This is the kind of guy you want as your captain. You know, he says all the right things in the media. You know, he's an emotional leader, emotional guy. He can also play on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
You know? He's the face of that team. Him and Carey Price, but you know, as we learned from Luongo, you don't want the goalie to be the captain.
No.
So I don't know why. I think they should just have slapped a C on him. Maybe do it at the same time they give him the contract. Just say, like, this is our guy.
Yeah, it seemed like that would have made a whole lot of sense. Instead, he's wearing the A along with three other dudes. Before we take the break, want to have a quick look at the Ottawa Senators, and we'll look out west after the break before we get to the 11 o'clock hour. The Senators finished 37-31-14 last year. Big acquisition of Bobby Ryan and the big signing of Bobby Ryan to that new deal. Had to get done. He's locked up until 2022. Money, I guess you can quibble with whether he's worth exactly that, but it's not a guy that can allow to walk away, especially considering the loss of Jason Spezza in the offseason. They've got a great defender in Erik Karlsson. Who knows what's going on with the goaltending there, as both Craig Anderson and Robin Leonard locked up to multi-year deals, so they don't necessarily have a number one, although I think Craig Anderson's probably going to start game one, probably a bit of a timeshare there. What are the expectations for this team? I feel like they're pretty low, but isn't this a team kind of on the rise, on the way up?
Kind of, but I don't know. My impression is that they're going to be in that sort of 7 to 10 spot, and you know, maybe they might get in as the number 8 team. But yeah, I mean, I like Bobby Ryan. I think he's a good player, but that contract seems a bit ridiculous, like the $7 million cap hit. I mean, for a guy who's never scored 50 goals in a season or recorded 100 points.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like a bit rich to me.
Well, he's going to get something close to that or exactly that on the open market in, you know, in July if he had a went that far. And I do think, you know, Canadian markets, you know, places people don't exactly want to come to, like Edmonton and Ottawa, there is kind of a little tax.
Yeah.
That, you know, guys with that leverage of going to free agency wield, right? So I think it was a great move. I think the Senators fans are getting frustrated. You know, they recently saw, I mean, obviously past his prime, but they saw Alfredson leave in kind of an ugly situation. He ended up choosing the Red Wings and saying, not only I'm choosing them because I think they have a better chance to win the cup, you know, and that was a bit of a shot to Sens fans. Then they see their next captain, Spezza, get traded, you know, so they're starting to get frustrated. It's like, yeah, we're developing young guys. Yeah, we have potential. We're the pesky Sens, but we can't keep a superstar. Well, here you go. You know, let's plunk a whole bunch of money down and lock up Bobby Ryan, who is our most dangerous player, you know, outside of Karlsson. So I like that move. And then I like the fact that they made Karlsson captain. You know, we were talking about PK. You know, the Senators have gone all in with Karlsson. They had two veteran captains leave in 2 short years. They're like, we want stability. You know, Karlsson's locked up till 2020 or something.
Yeah, 2019.
So, you know, let's slap a C on him. He's our most exciting player. He's our best player. The guy's, you know, great with the media, great with teammates. You know, he spoke with Alfredson for 45 minutes on the phone or something. I read before he took the C.
Oh yeah,
you know, like he's a student of the game. So you know, I like that they're locking up their core here. And the next big piece will be Mark Methot, who's due to hit free agency in the summer, and whether they can lock him up. So, yeah, I'm all for the Bobby Ryan signing. I think they had no choice. I think it would have been a real blow to their fans.
And it seemed like the writing was kind of on the wall, right, as well, where he wasn't making any statements like, yeah, I think it'll get done, or I'm committed long-term. It was kind of out of nowhere, in fact, this extension. Because a lot of people thought he was going to be moving on after the Senators.
Oh, yeah. If I was a betting man, I would have bet that he would have been gone.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I was impressed. I was impressed that Bobby Ryan, you know, has bought in, you know, to being a Senator. He obviously likes it there. And that they gave him the money. I thought it was a good deal. But this Methot thing is going to get interesting because he's that rare stay-at-home defenseman, you know, a true defenseman on a team that gave up a lot of shots. We always talk about the Leafs, but the Senators were really bad defensively last year. And they have that, you know, the wild card in Karlsson who can charge the offense from the back end. But they need those guys that, you know, can lock down. And Methot's that guy. But he's, you know, he could get rich. He could get that Matt Niskanen money on the open market if they don't lock him up.
When we come back, we'll head out west, have a look at the Canucks, who no longer have Roberto Luongo. They no longer have Corey Schneider. But they have a goalie who could be good. He was kind of lousy in the playoffs last year, though. I'll also talk about the Oilers and whether they're a lottery team once again. They finally figured things out. The Flames, some interesting pieces there. And also kind of interesting that they teach their youngsters how to fight in training camp. Also, the forgotten Canadian team, the Winnipeg Jets. We'll get to them all before the top of the hour. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis, along with Luke Fox and John Molinaro on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis, along with Luke Fox and John Molinaro of Sportsnet Magazine. Having a look at all seven Canadian National Hockey League teams, we get set for puck drop on Wednesday. Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens, you can hear it, of course, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet Ontario, obviously. Sportsnet has every game ever times 100 this year. The Vancouver Canucks, we know expectations have been dropped on them after missing the postseason. The debacle that was the goaltending situation in Vancouver has kind of been solved. I mean, Ryan Miller was supposed to be this huge, high-profile free agent, and I think the way the playoffs went down in St. Louis with the Blues and him almost being the reason why they did not advance certainly took a bit of a shine off of him and how much money teams were going to pay him to be their number one goaltender. But he ends up in Vancouver. You could do worse. They have a new head coach in Willie Desjardins, Jim Benning already turning some heads as the GM there. You still do have the Twins. And it's not like the Twins are 60 years old, right? There's still something there. They had down year offensively last year, and you wonder how much of that comes down to head coaching. So the Vancouver Canucks, what do we make of them? Are they prime for a bounce back? Was that a blip on the radar, or was that part of, yes, the dominant Canucks teams of the Western Conference of years past and making it to a cup final? That is no more. Or could this be a team back in the playoffs in the West this year?
I think if they are a team back in the playoffs, they're in that seventh or eighth spot. You look at the Western standings, and you look at the depth in the West, and it's ridiculous. You have to realize that you have to take one of these teams out. You know, Anaheim, Colorado, St. Louis, San Jose, Chicago, Los Angeles all had 100 points last season. You know, they're... Can you argue that they got worse? Maybe there's some trouble in San Jose, but they're still a playoff team. So, you know, Minnesota got better by getting Thomas Vanek. Dallas got Spezza. You know, these were the playoff teams, and they improved or stayed relatively the same. So Vancouver's in tough. So if they do make it, and I think they do have a shot, you know, they finished the season without a real number one goaltender. Eddie Lack did fine. But they needed that number one in Ryan Miller. They went out and got him. Kudos to Jim Benning for that. And Alex Burrows wasn't quite cutting it on the line with the Sedin. So they went out and got Radim Verbata, which was a great pickup, reasonable rate. And, you know, I think they did get better. I think Ryan Kessler situation was bad. I think, you know, Roberto Luongo, everyone knew he wanted out. Everyone knew Kessler wanted out. So they had to clean those guys out. So that was a step in the right direction. They got a coach who's you know, people say nothing but good things about Willie Desjardins. He just won the Calder Cup. You know, Tortorella, that was a bit of a sideshow. Mike Gillis, you know, he's going to go down as one of the worst decisions, you know, hiring him as GM. You know, he bungled that goaltending crease. Two goaltenders. Yeah, he really bungled that situation. So they're starting. I think I do like what they've done. You know, they're cleaning house the right way. You know, they brought in Trevor Linden to be the face, you know, local hero, all that. You know, they brought in a really smart GM. They brought in a respected coach. And, you know, they started from the net out. You know, they got a number one goalie in Ryan Miller. And the fact that he didn't do so well in the playoffs with the Blues probably helped their cause. You know, I don't think Miller had that much of leverage, you know, in the free agent talks. So, you know, I do like the moves they made, but they're going to be a bubble team just because of the strength of the competition.
it's almost like we talked about the East being so wide open and the Leafs, yeah, they could be a bubble playoff team, but look at the Montreal Canadiens, what they did last year. Who would have predicted that? It's just the byproduct of the East being kind of middling, mediocre. It's the absolute opposite in the West, right? Like the Vancouver Canucks, sure. I mean, they could, you know, package lightning in a bottle here, but there's no way they end up as, you know, one of those top teams in the Western Conference. It's just not possible, is it, John?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think they're in, as Luke said, in that 7-8 spot, and they're just a bubble team because the West is so strong. I mean, you have teams who are, you know, three or four teams who had like 100 points last season, and you all look, I mean, Dallas picking up Spezza, I think that was a great move, and they're going to be better, and Colorado is better. All these teams, these top teams, made improved moves. So, I mean, you know, what's Vancouver going to do? I mean, I like Ryan Miller. I think that's a great sort of signing, and I think Desjardins he's going to bring stability, because that Tortorella thing was just like just a media sideshow and a circus, and I think it was the absolute last thing that they needed out there.
Those press conferences are going to be a whole lot
less entertaining. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that's probably what they need. I think they just need to kind of get back to focus on what's happening on the ice. And I think Torts was, like I said, just it was too much of a media sort of circus over there. And I think that really detracted from the, you know, them kind of playing good hockey. So it'll be interesting to see. I think, like I said, I think Desjardins brings more stability. I think Miller, firmly as the number one goalie, brings more stability. I think Verbatim playing with the Sedins, that's going to be, you know, I think that brings more stability to the top line. But just the West is so packed, so it's going to be really tough for Vancouver.
And the other thing is, I don't think the Sedins will be killing penalties anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So,
well, yeah, how much of their down year had to do with Tortorella? Probably a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. Let's move forward. We got three more Canadian teams to get to. The Edmonton Oilers, we know there's so much talent, at least offensively, right? There's guys that could end up as all-stars, guys that are already coming into their own offensively. Taylor Hall, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Jordan Eberle, these are guys that have lots of skill. Nail Yakupov, these guys have lots of offensive skill and probably could command a whole bunch in trades. But that's not this team's problem. They have no problem offensively. It's the defensive scheme. And Dallas Eakins tried to put in a scheme last year, was unsuccessful another year, and continuing to look at statistical evaluations in different ways. They think they have a goalie now in Ben Scrivens, who at times has been otherworldly, stopping 60 shots and whatever. Is this finally the year for the Edmonton Oilers to get out of that stupid NHL draft lottery? Again, though, they play in the Western Conference.
Yeah, it's going to be more of the same for Edmonton, unfortunately.
What do they do? Do you trade one of those guys then?
Maybe. You know, I think if they do, it will probably be Yakupov.
But he probably commands the least, right? Because he's kind of like the prototypical and stereotypical Russian guy who kind of does his own thing and isn't very responsible defensively.
Yeah, but he's a remarkable talent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. They're in a tough situation. It's kind of like they just have to wait a little bit and let these guys mature. Taylor Hall is an incredible player. Same with Eberle.
Maybe underrated too.
Yeah,
Hall.
Yeah. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, you know, I think that he needs to develop a little bit more and be a bit more assertive, you know. And it's hard because he's not a large man. Yeah, the Oilers, again, they play in the tough Western Conference. But I think there's a lot of pressure on Dallas Eakins here. You know, he was the guy in the AHL where it was like, this guy is, of all the AHL coaches, this guy's NHL ready. And it didn't go that well. You know, it was pretty much a disaster.
Yeah.
So he's going to be a bit on the hot seat. And he was also very vocal in the media last year. And apparently he's made it a point that he's going to step back from that. But they do have some interesting things going. I do like what they did with their goaltending last year. I think they started like six different goaltenders.
Yeah.
Like the crease was up for grabs like constantly. So they settled that down. They got Ben Scrivens and Victor Fast. Don't forget about him. And he's looked really sharp in the preseason. So those guys, that's going to be a nice, healthy competition because neither one has been a, you know, a sure, solid number one, and they're both hungry. So I like what they did in net. And they did pick up some defensemen. You know, they got Nikitin, which was a smart pickup. Again, you know, for these teams, like especially places like Edmonton, they do have to pay a little extra to get guys to want to come to Edmonton. But the young forwards are so exciting that you want to see this team break out because they're fun to watch. But I don't know. I just think the defense just doesn't stack up against when you look, compare them to the other teams in the West.
I think the other thing is too, is like, who's the team leader on this team?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I look at it and I'm not sure who you point to.
No more Ryan Smith.
Yeah. There's no sort of like veteran guy who you can sort of point to and say, you know, this is kind of like, you know, the face. I mean, whatever, Nugent Hopkins and Eberle, they're all fantastic talents, but I'm not sure there's like a presence there that you can say, you know, he is the Edmonton Oilers. So I think that's part of the issue. I think I'm interested with, you know, the analytics angle here and bringing in someone like Tyler Dello.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be, I don't think that's going to be the key to their season, but I do think that'll help them because it is Edmonton and they are going to have trouble sort of attracting players who want to come play there. They're going to have to use every sort of tool that they can to help identify players flying under the radar. And hopefully, you know, for Edmonton's sake, Dello can help them with that. So it'll be interesting to see the Oilers from that perspective this season.
I do think they have a good captain in Andrew Ferentz, but I think he's kind of like a bridge captain until Taylor. Like, I think Taylor Hall is going to be the guy.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be the face of this franchise. But, you know, the thing with that is you got to win. Like, until you have to be a winning team for people to start identifying certain guys. You know, he can put up great numbers, but until the team starts winning, you know, it kind of lessens that.
Well, we blew it. We ran out of time to talk about the Flames and Jets, but that's okay. Not much to talk about the Flames anyways. They're going to stink, and I think the Jets still think Andre Pavelec is good, so they're also going to stink. So there's our breakdown of those two teams. When we come back, we're going to talk a little playoff baseball. Quadruple header yesterday on Sportsnet. Two more games today, and one of them on Sportsnet, the other one on MLB Network. We'll talk about yesterday, and we'll get John Molinaro's take on baseball. He loves it. He can't wait to talk about it for 20 minutes. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis, along with Luke Fox and John Molinaro on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I am Ben Ennis, along with Luke Fox and John Molinaro. We will get to Major League Baseball playoff talk in just a bit. Four spectacular games yesterday, but mentioned that we ran out of time to get to those last two Canadian NHL teams and a preview of them in the last segment. Well, you know, let's not short shrift the Calgary Flames and Winnipeg Jets. Give them a little bit of time. I don't know how much time they need. Maybe some more than others, but let's start with the Flames, guys. Brian Burke is still there. They have a GM. Bob Hartley's still the head coach. They are practicing their fighting in training camp because that is important in this day and age, the National Hockey. You got to be able to fight. If you can't, you know, score goals, can't keep the puck out of your own net, you better be able to punch a guy in the face with your fist. And the Flames, I guess, are going to be good at doing this. They are in full rebuild mode. They're going to be in the McDavid sweepstakes along with the Sabres, neck and neck, see how they do. But is there a future there? They do have Jonas Hiller in goal. Be tough. It's tough to, you know, really stink all that bad when you have a goalie, right?
Mm-hmm.
That maybe it wasn't a great move. They should have had the shooter tutor in net probably, right, Luke?
Yeah, I don't they did improve their goaltending, but I don't know if the goal should be to improve this year with Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel sitting there waiting next summer at the draft. So this is going to be the basement team in the West. I'd be surprised if they're not. They also lost their top scorer. Mike Camilleri walked away, went to New Jersey. He had more goals than anyone else on the team last year. And they got nothing for him. So I think that was a bit of a misstep. They should have realized that they weren't going to be able to re-sign him and deal him at the trade deadline. So this team, you know, they could be worse than last year. Last year, they kind of surprised people with how much they fought. They were a scrappy team. They were in game. They weren't getting blown out. They were in games, but they were losing. They're going to lose plenty this year. But I like their future. You know, they have Sam Bennett. And, you know, there's some debate over whether he should play. I don't think he should. I think he should go back and junior, developed. There's no rush. And they have Johnny Gaudreau, who looks fantastic. Same thing. I think these guys should just let them develop. There's no rush to get them up in the NHL. And if, you know, if they do land McDavid or Eichel or someone exciting, this could be a team, you know, way down the road, but this could be an interesting team, you know, that at least they know what they're doing. Unlike, you know, the Canucks are kind of trapped in that middle ground because they still have veterans. This team is on a full blown rebuild, you know, and I think the Calgary fans are smart enough to realize, you know, we're going to enjoy this. We got, you know, we have that promise of exciting young players in the system, and they're going to be patient for a while.
Kind of reminds me of the Oilers a couple years ago when they started all this, and you kind of knew that this was going to take some time and that they were at the start of their rebuilding thing. So, yeah, I don't think, I mean, expectations are what they are in Calgary. I don't think anyone expects them to be fighting for a playoff spot, especially in the West. I just wonder, though, about guys like Hartley and Brian Burke, if the game hasn't passed them by a little bit. I mean, and this fighting thing is just like the perfect example.
Right.
I mean, it's such, I don't know, old-time hockey kind of mentality. And I just wonder if you need kind of different blood in there just to rejuvenate this sort of rebuilding process a little bit.
It seems like the rest of the NHL is kind of moving past that. And,
yeah.
And we're seeing more analytics and smaller, speedier guys enter the game where – you know, Calgary, sure, they have their small, speedy guys, but they're also, you know, they spend a whole bunch of money on Derek England, and Brian McGrattan still is on this team. And you bring up an interesting point, John, in the comparison to the Edmonton Oilers. If you're a fan out west in Alberta, who are you more excited about the future with? Is it Edmonton with all those great pieces, or is it Calgary? Can you project a couple years down the line? John, if you're in Alberta, who are you more excited about the future? Is it the Flames or is it the Oilers?
Right now, I'm probably more excited about the Oilers just with that core of Eberle and Nugent Hopkins and all those guys that they have. But I mean, who knows what's coming up down like draft-wise, right? I mean, it's hard to know. But I think right now, I'm probably more excited to be an Edmonton fan.
But haven't we already seen what they are in Edmonton? Aren't we still waiting to see what the Flames are? We've already seen that Oiler core together, what now, 3 years? So I don't know. It's a tough question.
I don't know if there's – I wouldn't describe the mood in Edmonton as excitement.
Yeah, right.
Right now. I think it used to be, but I think, you know, there's starting to be some impatience now. It's like, all right, enough already. Like, and I don't know if they need to, you know, get into the playoffs and win a round, but they want to be competitive. Last year, they were basically done by December. Like, they played their way out so quickly that I think it got to their fans, you know, and they were, you know, calling for Kevin Lowe's head and stuff.
Flying onto the ice.
Oh, yeah. Like, it got ugly. So I think they just need to be a bit more competitive. You know, they need to be in the conversation after Christmas, you know, maybe if we go on a bit of a run, we can grab that eighth spot. They just want to feel like this team is competing a bit better. But I think in Calgary, they're seeing these young guys got a little taste in the preseason. You know, the prospect of landing, you know, this is the draft. Like, if you're going to rebuild, this is the draft to rebuild, right? So I think there's probably more excitement right now in Calgary. Edmonton's like, all right, time's up. Let's see some results now.
The Winnipeg Jets are kind of the forgotten Canadian franchise. It's not that they're the worst. There's some nice pieces there, and who knows what they do with Evander Kane. He's an exciting player, whether they finally do move on. But it just it seems like they're kind of meh, right? Like, and I think that's perfect description of what they did in the offseason. Meh. They didn't do a whole lot. They didn't excite that fan base. Not that they need exciting. It's the smallest building in the National Hockey League, and they pack it, and they're always excited. And it seems like a fun place to go watch a hockey game, although I don't think there's too many players that are clamoring to go to Winnipeg to play for this team. But they're in the West now. they've, for whatever reason, have committed to Andrei Pavelec as their number one goaltender, despite all the numbers suggesting that he just plain ain't that good. And I don't know if that's the only reason, but it might be one of the major reasons that the Winnipeg Jets aren't moving forward into that echelon of playoff teams, Luke.
Yeah, I think that's a huge reason. I think when you look around the league, that, you know, that's probably, you know, the worst starting goaltender in terms of.
Why do they think he's good?
I don't know. Or maybe they've quietly tried to improve it and haven't been able to because people don't want to go to Winnipeg.
Really?
It's a tough sell, I think, for free agents. I'm trying to give GM Kevin Cheveldayoff a bit of a break here because he really hasn't done anything. You know, he hasn't made a splash, and he's threatened to make a big splash and hasn't been able to. So this team and realignment did them no favors whatsoever. You know, in the East, you could say, oh, maybe if they get on a run, they might sneak into a spot. In the West, it's not going to happen. You know, Evander Kane, he's coming off like a really disappointing season. So he'll be an interesting guy to watch. They do have some youth that, you know, some promise in Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba, you know, nice piece on the back end there. But, they're just trapped and they can't seem to land that big deal. And you're right. They didn't go out and get a goalie. And the weird thing was that they committed to Andrei Pavlik, like right away, right as soon as they were eliminated from the playoffs, they said he's our number one guy. They didn't say, well, we'll see, and we're always open to upgrading. So that commitment to a mediocre to poor goaltender is puzzling.
Yeah, it kind of speaks to their lack of ambition, I think, or just, you know, like for me, I think, as I said before in the show, you kind of build, for me, I think you build from the back up, right? And you kind of get those core defenders and those core goalies in place, and then the rest will come because you can always be in games as long as you can keep the puck out of the net. I'm not sure the Jets have a star goalkeeper that can kind of keep them in games. So it's going to be tough for them. And especially, as I said, going to the West, that's like a killer for them.
Does the shine ever wear off that team? Because they were so excited to get a franchise back, right, in Winnipeg. I was born there. Don't remember it
really
that much. Yeah, I lived there for 3 years. So I moved away when I was three. So I don't remember it a whole heck of a lot. But I recall there not being a whole bunch to do in Winnipeg, right, especially in the winter. I guess they'll never – you know, stop showing up. And I mentioned it's the smallest building in the National Hockey League. But at some point, they got to make the playoffs, don't they? If you're a fan of the Winnipeg Jets, or do you stop caring? I don't know. It's hard to put ourselves in Winnipeg.
But. No, absolutely. At some point, you do have to make the playoffs. But I've got friends who live in Winnipeg, and the excitement in that city for that team, even as they are, massive.
Really?
So, I mean, I think they've got some time. In terms of, you know, they're not going to lose fan interest anytime soon, but in terms of like getting it right on, you know, on the ice, they're going to have to address that eventually.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis, along with Luke Fox and John Molinaro on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Quadruple header of playoff baseball yesterday on Sportsnet. It was spectacular if you're into baseball like me. I couldn't tear my eyes away. It started at noon, ended at like 1 in the morning. As the Royals beat the Angels in 11 innings. Cardinals beat up on Clayton Kershaw. The Royals, I mentioned, they won. They still haven't won a game or even played a playoff game that's lasted 9 innings in 29 years because every single game they've played has lasted 11 innings. The Tigers go down 0-2 to the Orioles as their bullpen collapses again, and the Giants take game one over Steven Strasburg and the Nationals 3-2. But, guys, looking at these playoff games, it's hard to not feel sorry for Blue Jays fans, right? Because now, after the Royals have made it and done pretty well in their first go-around in the playoffs in 29 years, the Blue Jays now hold the longest playoff drought in Major League Baseball. You look at the excitement of these games. Not every game has been exciting. There's one game, that National League wildcard game, was kind of a blowout. But every single game. And you can see the home fans. We haven't even seen a game in Kansas City yet outside of the one-game playoff, but the series now shifting to Kansas City. Can you imagine what this city would be like? We saw it when the Raptors got a taste of playoff basketball last year. Can you imagine what this city would be like if there was a one-game playoff, even one game, the Blue Jays and the Royals, or the Blue Jays and the A's, something like that? John, can you imagine what that would be like for Blue Jays fans?
No, it'd be massive. I mean, you're talking about the longest sort of playoff drought in Major League Baseball, and I think North American sports, really.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's 92 and 93. It seems like ages ago. It really does.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if they even like a one sort of that play in the ALDS or whatever, it'd be massive for the city, right? Because I think you look at what the Jays have done the last couple of years, and they've spent maybe, and some would say they haven't spent as much as they should, but they have spent, and yet they're still not playing meaningful baseball towards the end of September. So if they ever get like a sniff of, you know, that sort of wild card game, I think the city would just blow up and it would be massive. And even if the game wasn't here, even if it was on the road, it'd still be a big, massive deal, because I think people are just so starved for success when it comes to the Jays.
Go ahead, Luke.
I was watching the game last night, St. Louis, LA, and you're right. You mentioned the fans. The camera pans over the home fans. They got their rally caps on, you know, children, women, like clenching their fists, like can't sit still. Like there's just tension, and it was so loud. You know, bottom of the ninth, two out, Yasiel Puig at the plate,
right,
runner in scoring position. Like I was into it. I'm not a massive fan of either of those teams, and I was like riveted. You know, like playoff baseball can be thrilling, and then you know, you see these teams, especially these teams in the blue and white color scheme, like the Dodgers and the Royals, and it just makes you think, oh man,
yeah.
You know. What would it be like if it was like that in Toronto again? It really makes you yearn for a winner, you know, with the Jays.
Yeah, you mentioned that game and the tension of a bottom of the ninth situation. The Dodgers had already scored once, and Yasiel Puig, all the excitement surrounding him, and Trevor Rosenthal, a guy throws 100 miles an hour on the mound. Is playoff baseball... To me, it seems so different than regular season baseball. I'm a guy who loves regular season baseball anyways, and I will watch I'll watch Tigers, Orioles, regular season. It doesn't take playoffs to get me to watch playoff baseball. But, for, you know, the casual baseball fan, Luke, looking at games like that game, like almost every game, these Major League Baseball playoffs, save for one, the drama, how close they've been, the crazy comebacks that despite being down four runs, the Royals can come back and beat the A's in extra innings and have spectacular catches. Nori Aoki the other day. Do you think there's baseball fans being kind of born right now over these playoffs? Like, are there sports fans, general sports fans in Kansas City who are now all of a sudden baseball fans because of the excitement level of these playoffs already?
I think it can happen. I think it can happen for sure. I think people are drawn to, you know, that drama that like this when the stakes are high. I think for some casual sports fans, you know, it's hard to put that much meaning in one out of 162 games, right? But when you know, the winner take all play-in game or, you know, best of five, best of seven, like everything matters. So you can get sucked into the strategy. Every manager's decision matters. You know, you see like elite stars come through in the clutch, and then, you know, those are things that you remember. Or you see guys like Kershaw get batted around, you know, like a punching bag. And then, you know, so that becomes a defining moment. So I think it can really suck people in. I mean, I would describe myself as a very casual baseball fan. But when it comes to playoff time, yeah, I'm all aboard.
It's thrilling, no question. Is there a comparison to be made? Because, yeah, you know, National Hockey, Stanley Cup playoffs are spectacular. There's a whole lot more of them. Every game's a seven games. Every series is seven games, whereas we're talking about five game series here in the DS and the, of course, one game elimination in the wild card. There's just more playoff teams in the National Hockey League. Is there a comparison to be made? Because, I don't know, maybe I'm looking at it through the prism of being a big baseball guy, but I almost feel like the tension with every single pitch is more then you'll get every second of a Stanley Cup playoff game. Maybe Stanley Cup playoff overtime is on the level of that. Is baseball the most tense playoff sport? Or are you going to say that still the Stanley Cup playoffs are your favorite playoff tension moments, John?
That's an interesting question. Probably baseball, only because of those tension-filled moments and because a lot of it hinges on those sort of one-on-one sort of encounters, right? Like top of the ninth or bottom of the ninth with two out and a guy on third. And
right. We can't set it up in the Stanley Cup playoffs to have the best player against a goalie. You can't set up a breakaway in overtime. Whereas baseball, these moments kind of happen organically.
Yeah. And they're very throughout. Right. And it's like, and as Luke said before, it's like each decision by the manager has like a major bearing on the result. So I do think there is that. I mean, for me, I don't feel like in terms of excitement, there's nothing that compares to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
You'll take Stoke and Sunderland every day.
But I mean, for me, the Stanley Cup playoffs are still, I think, one of the most exciting things in North American sports. I think they're just so riveting. But I do think there is something about like the tension and the drama of the baseball playoffs and how these sort of one-on-one situations just brings it to another level.
I think part of that's television, though, right? You
have
those moments where you can get a close-up on the pitcher's face.
Because it's so
slow-moving, right? A close-up on the batter.
Right.
You know, he's like, okay, he steps out. He, adjusts his gloves and that needs a moment to think about it, right? And then it goes to the manager. So it's like the way television films baseball, I think, creates a bit more tension.
Yeah. I think the storytelling aspect of it, too, in terms of the commentators, right? Because of, an at-bat can take, it's not over in 2 seconds. A guy might step out of the box. But in between that time, the commentators are sort of, laying out the history and giving it greater context about, the one-on-one matchup and, where the guy was born and how, what kind of season he had.
What his shoe size is.
Well, but I do think that kind of adds to it as well, that sort of storytelling element. It just kind of, it kind of makes the viewer, the television viewer, a little bit more invested in it and really understand it within the wider context.
Yeah, it's been great so far. And hopefully a couple more great games this afternoon and tonight on Sportsnet. When we come back, Toronto FC's, they're back into it. I left the studio last week. They were down 2-0. They came back and won 3-2. And all of a sudden, after I had them dead and buried, they could possibly be on the verge of their first playoff berth in their franchise's history because they have Jermaine Defoe back for tonight's game in L.A. against the Galaxy. We'll also maybe have a little look at the Raptors getting set to start their season. Also, the Buffalo Bills going with Kyle Orton. For some reason, the EJ Manuel era likely over in Buffalo. Plenty more coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Luke Fox, John Molinaro, I'm Ben Ennis on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fourth. The Argos are in Edmonton this afternoon for a 4:00 kickoff. BC is in Hamilton to face off against the Ticats at 7:00. And you can watch the final of the Japan Open this morning at 1 a.m. on Sportsnet 1 as Milos Raonic faces Kei Nishikori. You're listening to the home of Leafs Nation, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I am Ben Ennis, along with John Molinaro, Luke Fox. NFL regular season continues, full slate of games, of course, tomorrow. And Buffalo Bills will have a new man running things behind center. EJ Manuel is out. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't great either. And a lot of things expected of him. In comes Kyle Orton. A guy who's had more than his fair share of opportunities in the NFL and at times has actually looked pretty spectacular with Broncos and what have you. He's been around the block and back again. And I guess, guys, this move all comes down to the Buffalo Bills looking around this division and saying, everybody else kind of stinks. We better start winning some games. We could win this division.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that division, New England off to the poor kind of start that they are and the Jets, and it's certainly a winnable division. I think just with the Bills in this quarterbacking situation, I mean, have they had a great quarterback since Jim Kelly left?
No.
So, I mean, and
nobody was excited about JP Lossman.
Right.
No.
So, and how long ago did he retire? It was like 96 or something like that.
Yeah.
So we're talking about almost 20 years now and they haven't figured out that, to get another kind of franchise quarterback in there. And just, you look at the turnover at that position since Kelly's gone, it's staggering. So, I mean, they got, like, I don't know what's going on in Buffalo, but they got to address that. Like, they got to go out and kind of find a franchise quarterback next season.
Well, they thought EJ Manuel might have been the guy, but I guess, I mean, I didn't think he was horrible. I think there's still something there potentially, but when you make a move like this, aren't you, you're killing all opportunities to go back to him, Luke?
Oh yeah. This is a complete sign that they're just, you know, impatient and going for it now, because they do sense weakness in the division. It's the weakest division in the AFC. They haven't made the playoffs since 99.
Yeah.
So they you know, they're seeing this as an opportunity to, you know, right now everyone's, you know, the leaders are 500 in that division. So if Orton can orchestrate an offense that, you know, gets them a few games over 500, maybe they squeak into the playoffs. But I think it's very much short-term thinking. Like, how much time did they really give Manuel to develop? What did they expect? You know, it takes time to be an NFL quarterback. It's the toughest position in my mind in sports. So, you know, yes, he was a first rounder. Oh, he didn't deliver right away. Let's, you know, pull the chute and get in a veteran where we kind of know what he's going to do. I don't really like the move that much. You know, I think you need to be patient with young guys, young quarterbacks, develop a number one starter. You know, there's only so many bona fide proven number ones out there. So you have to take the time to really develop a guy. And I think they've cut him off a little short here.
And Sportsnet did a great breakdown of the first 14 games of a quarterback's career, which EJ Manuel just has 14 games. His numbers aren't spectacular, but they stack up against some of the great quarterbacks of all time in their first 14 games because, yeah, you're right, it does take a while to break through as a quarterback, to figure out the league. Even the greats don't usually start like a house on fire, but it screams out this move like a move you would make if you're trying to save your job, which I'm sure the brain trust in Buffalo is trying to do, because if they don't make the playoffs, I mean, you're not even talking about if they don't finish 8-8. If they don't make the playoffs this year, especially this year in Buffalo, heads are going to roll. Just because it's been so long, they invested so much in that offense with Sammy Watkins. That's another thing. There are some offensive pieces there. Are we going to be shocked if Kyle Orton goes out and performs pretty well with the pieces that are around him, like Watkins, like a C.J. Spiller and the like? Probably not.
Probably not. No. And I think it is short-sighted to make the change so far. I mean, four games into the season, I think you have to kind of give the kid a little bit more time. But, yeah, I think Buffalo is just thinking short-term here. They're not thinking about sort of developing their quarterback, which they probably should. But, you know, who knows? It's such a screwed-up situation there with the whole ownership and the future of the franchise. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, there's instability off the field, so it doesn't surprise me that there's instability on the field as well.
Well, a little more stability now that they do have an owner, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think we're skirting around the issue, though, especially when we're talking about that division, that Tom Brady might be too old and decrepit to get it done in New England with the Patriots, or maybe just doesn't have enough weapons. I mean, it's probably a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, but they're 2-2, and they aren't blowing anybody out of the water with their play. They already lost to a Dolphins team that we've seen is not so great. It was like 110 degrees in Miami when they played earlier in the season. They got absolutely annihilated by the Kansas City Chiefs last week. Tom Brady's 37. I mean, this couldn't continue for forever. Although, you know, they've got a Cincinnati Bengals team this week that it could be an entirely different conversation next week if they beat, because they are unbeaten, the Bengals. But so far, Luke, it looks like all good things must come to an end in New England.
Yeah, well, that Chiefs loss was incredible, like just how devastating it was. And it's very atypical from what we've seen in the Brady-Belichick era. But, you know, we're still talking about Tom Brady here. I don't think we should write him off just yet. And I will fault, you know, his lack of weapons. I think he still has a decent arm. He's still, you know, one of the smartest men in the game. So, you know, I don't think that, you know, we should write off Tom Brady just because they're off to a pretty bumbling start here. But I think it's more just the team as a whole used to be a powerhouse, and as a whole, they've taken a significant step back and are regressing now.
Maybe he's been partying too much with Giselle.
He's a family man, John. You know, come on. He just sits at home with the kids, yeah, wearing his Ugg boots. He doesn't go out partying anymore. Those days are behind him. He leaves that to Derek. leaves that to Derek Jeter. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Before we move on, though, Bill Belichick.
Duh.
I know you were saying off air, but before the show even started, how much of a jerk you think he is. And it's easy to get that impression. And probably is a jerk. You know, from all indications, he's jerky. And you know what? That'll fly if you're winning. But if
they're not winning, though.
If they're not winning, I mean, it's tough to be a jerk in that scenario, isn't it, John?
No, absolutely. If it's one thing if the Patriots were the Patriots of old and kind of blowing teams out of the water and Brady is being Tom Brady. But, you know, 2-2 in a pretty weak division coming off that heavy loss to Kansas City. And, you know, he's asking, you know, ahead of the Cincinnati game about the loss to the Chiefs and about Brady's future. And like, you know, Belichick could not be any more of a jerk in the press. I mean, like, he's such a gruff guy. I mean, my God. I mean, I don't know. He's a guy only like a wife and mother could love, really. He's just so unbelievably like snide and snarky.
And maybe if you're Tom Brady, you could love him as well because he's the reason you got a couple of rings on your finger.
Just play the game. Give a canned answer.
Right.
Like it doesn't have to be colorful. It doesn't have to be insightful. Just give the media, you know. Throw them the bone.
Yeah. Be polite about it. Just be a professional. I mean, I get that he doesn't want to do it and like it's like pulling teeth for him talking to the media. Fine. But get over it with it. Just, you know, just do your job. Like Brady, right? After the Kansas City game, he talked to the media. He didn't hide. You figure he was like, if anything, he was going to like just give one word answers. But he kind of like took responsibility and spoke openly about the loss. So like take a page from your quarterback and just kind of conduct yourself like that.
Yeah, we'll see. Big game for them tomorrow against the Cincinnati Bengals. And like I said, if they win that game, we could be having an entirely different conversation next week. The Raptors open up training camp in Vancouver. And now this team, after, you know, we thought they were tanking last year, they trade away Rudy Gay. Things went completely in the opposite direction. They make the playoffs, take the Brooklyn Nets to 7 games. They have the ball in the dying seconds of that 7th game with a chance to win it. Kyle Lowry comes up short, but now expectations are raised to another level. I'm already hearing excitement, and you look at some of the stories and people are already excited and want to hear more about this Raptors team and ticket prices. The demand is there to see this team. We already know what ticket prices during the playoffs were like for this team. They are back to, it seems, at least from an excitement, fan excitement level, back to those Vince Carter, Vinsanity era days where they were, you know, winning a playoff series, but getting deeper into the playoffs and building something. They were almost one of the more exciting franchises in the NBA back then. You used to have celebrities in town filming movies and showing up courtside. Are we back to that level? Are the Raptors, I mean, this might be heresy to say, but are they almost on par with the Maple Leafs as far as an excitement, a fan demand level in this city?
Well, I think there's always, Leafs are always going to be top, well, maybe not always, but for a while still are going to be the top dog in this city. But in terms of excitement and hope, it's the Raptors, definitely. You know, building off, you know, last season, making it to the playoffs, pushing the Nets to 7 games. You know, and it's not just, I think it's different than in the Vince years, because with Vince Carter was the star. You know, everyone was clinging to the one guy. You know, that's the jersey they wanted, you know, watching him in the slam dunk competition, all that. It was like Vinsanity. Whereas this is different. This is like a real team that gelled together, that kind of was an underdog team that grew as the season went on. You know, different guys shone at different moments. You know, now management has committed to the key pieces. So it's like the fan base has a reason to be excited. Plus, you know, similar to the NHL, the East is super weak. You know, so besides the LeBron show in Cleveland, there's no reason Toronto can't make it out of that first round this year. Like, there's a sense that this team can go farther than they did the year prior. And I don't think people feel that way about the Jays and the Leafs.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense of excitement, but also I think with that, there's a sense of expectations and responsibility, right? So, I mean, I think they have to win the Atlantic Division again. I think they have to. They came so close to winning that Game 7 against Brooklyn. So, I mean, I don't think a first-round exit would be acceptable. They got to get into that second round or and possibly into the conference finals, because anything less is just going to be seen as a letdown after really that sort of, you know, they really captured the imagination of the city last year. And when you look at them, of the three sort of MLSE teams, I think they're probably the most stable, and they probably have like the brightest future ahead of them just because of Ujiri and everything that he's done and the core pieces that they have. They really are. There's no, as Luke said, there's no real sort of, I mean, they're superstars, but this isn't a Vince Carter team. There's not that one guy that you kind of point to and say he's the Toronto Raptors. It's more of just a well-rounded team. And I think that's probably their strength.
Here's the question. Can you see at some point, I mentioned whether right now the Raptors have passed the Maple Leafs as far as a fan excitement being the number one ticket in town, but is there a possibility that down the line, this could be a Raptors town and Maple Leafs second? Because you got a whole generation of fans, young fans, who have grown up without any knowledge of the Maple Leafs being any good at all and being a sporting afterthought, especially in the NHL. Whereas, and I know the Raptors have kind of been that way as well, but now here they are creating this buzz, and a lot of people's formative years, maybe if they're able to sustain something, maybe get into a second round, get to an Eastern Conference final, could we see, you know, in 10, 15 years? Is that a thing, do you think, John?
Possibly. I just think they're always, as long as the Leafs are in town, they're always going to be the number one game in town. I mean, you know, the Leafs don't even have to make the playoffs, and it's still the hottest ticket. There's still incredible buzz about the team. I think they're always going to be kings of the city. I do think the Raptors can firmly sort of establish themselves as the number two franchise in the city, but in terms of supplanting the Leafs, I mean, it's a hockey city first and foremost, and I don't see that changing regardless of what the Raptors do.
Well, it's all about winning,
yeah.
Right? You know, when the Leafs were in the playoffs, that square was just as packed.
Yeah, it's
people
true.
People were going just as nuts. So it's about winning. And I think you could say the same thing about the Jays. If the Jays are playing in the playoffs, that, you know, the dome will be packed and people will be going crazy in the streets. Like, this city is so starving for a winner that, we'll buy into any team that's winning. And yeah. Right now it's the Raptors have the best shot.
Yeah, no question about it. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. One of those teams that is still waiting to win is Toronto FC. And John, last week might have been the most positive moment on the field for this team in franchise history. Is it over the top to say that? Coming back from 2-0 down to win 3-2 late in the season when you're out of a playoff spot after all the offseason acquisitions, so much negativity surrounding this team. I don't know. I can't think of another moment where maybe those CONCACAF Champions League games against the LA Galaxy, but other than that, like a league game, was that the biggest moment in franchise history?
I think it'll depend on what comes next, right? So, I mean, if it actually does turn out to be the turning point, if it does actually lead to them getting some momentum and them winning in LA tonight and then going into the playoffs, then absolutely. If nothing comes of it long term, if they sort of don't do anything over these last five games of the season and they fail to make the playoffs for the eighth straight year, then I think it's just going to be one of those sort of moments that people are going to look back and say, oh, yeah, remember when we were down late against Portland and we kind of came back and we won that game? It's going to be remembered as that. If they get into the playoffs and if it's the start of something special, then absolutely it'll be kind of looked on as one of those sort of, you know, landmark moments in franchise history. It's all going to depend on how they play out the rest of the month.
Luke, where is this team on the general sports fans' radar? Because I know they made a lot of noise with the signing of Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley and all the hoopla that went with that before the season started. And then they won their first game as well in pretty spectacular fashion, Jermaine Defoe scoring. Now that they had fallen out of playoff contention, have they fallen? Well, they're still on the outside looking in, but they have a game in hand on the New York Red Bulls, who are in fifth and just 1 point up. Are they starting to regain momentum, or is it still so far back in people's sporting minds here in Toronto?
I think it's pretty far back, to be honest. I think I kind of look at it kind of like what the Jays did two winters ago, where they made a big off-season splash and captured people's interest, got people's hopes up. But, I mean, to not have made the playoffs yet, you know, I think if they do get in, then that'll change. But I think people are still in, the average sports fan is still like, wait and see.
Yeah.
You know, you need to prove it. You need to actually make it, not just come close and miss. because then we'll just be let down again for the eighth year or whatever. So it's like, yeah, they need to actually get the results. But there was hype, I think, in the off season, and there was hope, but it just hasn't delivered in quite the way fans want them to.
No, certainly not. But tonight could go a long way to adding to that, although it's a tough test, John.
Tough test.
They only have the best team in Major League Soccer on the road. Yeah. They're in L.A. against the Galaxy. They're 57 points, lead all of Major League Soccer. But reinforcements are back. Jermaine Defoe, I'm led to believe, is actually going to play tonight.
Yeah, I talked to Coach Greg Vanney yesterday, and, you know, of course, Defoe hasn't played for 6 weeks because he's been battling that sort of groin injury. But he returned to full training on Monday, I think, and he's been cleared to play, and he traveled to Los Angeles, and he's going to see action. Now, Vanney says he's probably not going to start because I think they just want to sort of slowly work him back into the lineup, which makes sense. I mean, he hasn't, as I said, he hasn't played for nearly 6 weeks. And LA, I mean, if we're being serious, this game is probably a write-off anyway. So, I mean, why would you sort of risk starting him? I think, you know, if they can get anything, if they can get a point out of this, if they can draw them, then I think that's huge. When they play Houston on Wednesday at home, and that's the beginning of their, you know, final four games of the season, that's when, you know, you start Jermaine and you start rolling him out, and he's going to have to really produce. Otherwise, you know, this team's in trouble, and I think an eighth year without a playoff for berth is, you know, it might happen.
And that would be a huge disaster considering
considering
where we were at the beginning of the season. Before we go, John, do you see Jermaine Defoe here past this season? I think we all expect him to be loaned in the offseason, but that's entirely different.
Yep.
We know during the transfer window, his name was bandied about, Queen's Park Ranger. Now, we wonder how much of that was just, you know, Harry Redknapp posturing and saying stuff. But what he said was that Jermaine Defoe wants to leave Major League Soccer. And it's not something that's out of the realm of possibility by any stretch of the imagination. Is this a one-and-done thing with Jermaine Defoe?
I think so. I think he came close to joining QPR. I mean, the QPR did table a bid of $11 million. He has played for Harry Redknapp before. And I mean, I think Redknapp's comments were just about stoking the fire and kind of paving the way for him to eventually leaving. But, you know, from people that I've talked to behind the scenes, you know, Defoe has kind of been somewhat, I think he kind of regrets about coming here.
Why? Is it the level of play?
Yeah, it's just the level of play. It hasn't been, I don't think it's been sort of what he expected. I think he, and to be fair, I do think he can, he's still a, for me, even though he's 32, he's a young 32, and I still think he's a Premier League player. So I think he underestimated how much he misses England. I think he underestimates how much he's playing in the Premier League at a top level. He's going to have to take a pay cut. There's no question, because he's making whatever it is, I think $6.5 million in MLS. No Premier League club is going to pay him that. But I don't think it's kind of worked out from an on-field perspective as to what he thought it would be, because MLSE have treated him great. I mean, you know, they've thrown everything at him, and, you know,
he's
hanging out with Drake and everything. So I think from that regard, I mean, it's been great for him. But in terms of, you know, what he thought the actual sort of, you know, playing experience, it's kind of fallen short. So I suspect he's going to be gone in after this year.
Well, maybe last few chances for him to score in a TFC uniform. They are in LA tonight playing the Galaxy, 1 point out of a playoff spot. That'll do it for another edition of Sportsnet Magazine Live. I will be back next hour until 1 o'clock with an edition of Sportsnet Today. He's John Molinaro along with Luke Fox. I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.